This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Frank Stacio in Washington. Neil Conan's out today. In a pair of split decisions, the Supreme Court today ruled that displays of the Ten Commandments in and around government buildings are constitutional, except when they're not. In one case, the court ruled that a granite monument engraved with the Ten Commandments that sits on the grounds of the Texas State Capitol in Austin does not violate the separation of church and state because it's part of a larger tribute to the nation's legal and religious history. But in the other case, the court ruled that two framed copies of the commandments in Kentucky courthouses did promote religion and therefore are a violation. Are you confused? Well, in essence, the court determined that this culture war battleground has to be fought one case at a time. So today we'll look more into these rulings, the High Court's first on the Ten Commandment displays in a quarter of a century, and how they may affect the debate over religion and public space. Later on, Harry Connick Jr. has a new collaborator, Branford Marsalis. They both join us in Studio 4A to play a couple of tunes from their new album, Occasion, and they'll take your calls. But right now, government displays on the Ten Commandments. Is there a public display of the Ten Commandments in your community? Would you like to see it preserved or taken down? How about other religious displays? What do you think? Give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email address totn@npr.org. With us now, L.A. Times Supreme Court correspondent David Savage. David, welcome to the program.
Hi, Frank. How are you?
I'm fine. What precedent now do these two rulings set for us?
Well, I think the important precedent is the one that they're preserving, which is the sort of separation of church and state. The majority said the government may not promote or advance religion, and there were five of them in favor of that view, four strong dissents. But if you think the government may not promote or advance religion, they basically then applied that to these two cases and said, if you look at the situation in Kentucky, the officials were putting up these Ten Commandments to make a Souter said, an unmistakably religious statement, and that they agreed the government cannot do that. The government has to be neutral towards religion. That is, it can't favor it or it can't discourage it. In the second case in Texas, Stephen Breyer managed to make it a split vote by going with the majority to strike down the commandments in Kentucky. But then he said in the Texas case, there's a lot of things about the Texas monument that are not explicitly the government. This monument sits out on the Capitol grounds with something like 17 other monuments. It was put up by the Fraternal Order of Eagles in the mid-60s, to combat juvenile delinquency. And he said, so this is a borderline case, and I think the average person wouldn't see that monument sitting on the Capitol grounds as an explicitly religious statement. But if it is an explicitly religious statement by the government, then it's unconstitutional.
Well, as you suggest, or maybe as Justice Breyer suggests, these may both be, in a sense, borderline cases. We have borderline votes. What are we to make of two close votes that essentially go in different directions on this?
Well, that these are hard issues, that the government's, you know, the First Amendment says you may not have any laws respecting an establishment of religion, and the court has been struggling for years as to say, you know, what does that really mean? I guess the thing I'm a little bit that I would take from this is that while it's a very close split, there still is are five of them who are mostly in the camp of strict separation, and there are four on the other side: Chief Justice Rehnquist, Justice Scalia, Justice Thomas, and Justice Kennedy, who say the government should be able to acknowledge God's role in our nation's life or acknowledge religion. Scalia even talked about since 98% of believers, he said, Christians, Jews, and Muslims, are believers in one God, then the government ought to be able to talk about acknowledging a single creator. He went a little further than anyone I had seen write before, saying that the government can not only acknowledge religion, but it could sort of favor one religious view over another. But you're right to say these cases are always close calls, and it's very hard to take from a decision like this a very clear line. How do you know a clear line between, separating church and state?
The last big Ten Commandments case was in Alabama. There, Chief Justice Roy Moore actually lost his job because he refused to remove a 2.5-ton monument from the lobby of the state Supreme Court building. Does this ruling say anything about that?
Well, I think it says that the federal judges made the right decision in saying that what he had done had crossed the line, because his wasn't just a, you know, some sort of little plaque or something inside the courthouse. He put this monument right at the front of the courthouse and sort of said, and was quite upfront about saying, I want to make a statement about the importance of God's role in American life. So I'm going to put this Ten Commandments right in the middle of the state Supreme Court where everyone has to see it. And the federal judges said, and his colleagues on the Alabama Supreme Court agreed, that he had essentially violated the First Amendment and refused to remove the monument. So they removed it and removed him.
How about a display at the Supreme Court itself? There's a frieze there with the Ten Commandments in the Supreme Court building.
Yes, Justice Souter referred to it in reading the decision today. Up above the courtroom, there's a series of so-called lawgivers, about 20 carved in marble that were there when the court was built in the mid-30s. And one of them is Moses holding what appears to be a tablet. And Justice Souter said, certainly it's okay with a group of lawgivers to have Moses included, because that's really a statement about law and lawgivers and our legal heritage. It's another thing to put something in a public school or in a courthouse that begins with the words, you know, I am the Lord thy God. That seems much more like a religious statement.
Well, the big story today that didn't happen, I guess, was the possible retirement of either Chief Justice Rehnquist or Sandra Day O'Connor. Is it still likely we will see a justice step down before the end of the week?
I don't know. I think it's unlikely in O'Connor's case, by the way. It's possible that the Chief Justice could issue a statement later today or tomorrow morning. I would think if he's going to do it, it's going to be later today or tomorrow before the justices scatter. They were supposed to have a lunch today and another conference. They're supposed to issue some just orders tomorrow morning. So I think it's quite possible that if he's going to retire, he will make an announcement in the next 24 hours. But he did not sound good in the courtroom, I'll say. He sort of struggled to get out he had one of the opinions to deliver, and he gave a very truncated version and was breathing. He finds it's very difficult for him to speak at any length. On the other hand, the justices say he's actually doing fine in running the conferences and running the court. And if you'd asked a couple weeks ago, people would have said with absolute certainty he was going to retire. I think it's much less certain now, but I think we will know within 48 hours.
All right, David, thank you very much.
Thank you, Frank.
David Savage is Supreme Court reporter for the Los Angeles Times and joined us by phone from his office in Washington, talking about the Supreme Court's decisions on the Ten Commandments in public places, striking down Ten Commandments displays in Kentucky, but upholding a display in Texas. We're joined now by Noah Feldman, a professor at New York University School of Law. He's the author of Divided by God, America's Church-State Problem, and What We Should Do About It. He is with us from the studios of Maine Public Broadcasting in Portland. Noah Feldman, welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Also want to invite our callers to join the conversation at 800-989-8255. Where are the battle lines now in this debate?
The battle lines are between people who think that religion should play a major role in informing our political choices in government, and therefore think that religious symbols are just fine, and people, on the other hand, who think that religion is an entirely private matter and should therefore play no role in our governmental decisions and therefore should be kept out of places like courthouses or state capitals.
Why are the Ten Commandments so big in this debate?
You know, they became a symbol almost, I think, by accident. The Texas monument, Ten Commandments monument, was actually put up as part of a promotional project set forward by Cecil B. DeMille. When they released the Ten Commandments movie, the one with Charlton Heston, they gave money to a bunch of national organizations that wanted to put up Ten Commandments statues in the thought that that would actually bring people into the movie theaters. It's kind of astonishing. So that's the kind of symbol that I think seems to many people to almost have been arbitrary to begin with. But now it's tremendously significant to people. And when Judge Roy Moore, whom you alluded to earlier, put up a Ten Commandments symbol outside the courthouse in Montgomery, in Alabama, he was trying to send a message to his constituents that religion is the true source of values for governing in the United States. And they chose the Ten Commandments because they are law, and they wanted to use them to make the point that our laws should come from divine values.
And what does the Constitution actually say about, because we talk about the wall of separation between church and state. That's a phrase that Thomas Jefferson used. It's not one that's in the Constitution.
That's true, and it was a controversial statement even when he made it. Jefferson used that phrase in a letter that he was writing to the Baptists in Danbury, Connecticut, who with him opposed the clergy in New England, which was a Congregationalist clergy that really didn't believe in a wall of separation at all, that very much believed that state governments should use their funds to support religion as long as it was done in a nominally voluntary way. And Jefferson was strongly against that, but he was to some degree on a limb vis-a-vis the majority of people, at least in New England at the time.
800-989-8255. If you want to join our conversation today about the Supreme Court's decisions on the Ten Commandments, Cadia is on the line from Boise. Hi, Cadia.
Hi.
You have a question for us?
I have a comment. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
Just recently, we had a Ten Commandments monument moved from a public park to a local church nearby. This was impartially because the church offered to take it, but more because since we had that one statement of faith in a public park, other groups wanted to put up some blatantly homophobic and offensive statements there.
Mm.
And we were able to kind of, you know, escape that bullet, but now we have lots of religious groups who want it put back.
Mm. So this
so
is...
Just
Well, I want to turn this into a question for Noah Feldman, because it strikes me that this is the fear that there may not be a broad or widespread objection to displays of the Ten Commandments, particularly if they're part of a historical display, you know, the history of law in the world, but that when it leads to religious convictions on the part of a narrow group that may offend those of other parties in the U.S., that's the real fear, isn't it?
Yes.
And Noah, yeah.
Yeah, I think Cadia's anecdote is a really fascinating one, because it captures one of the real tensions for people who want to see more religion in the public square. On the one hand, they say, great, let's have the Ten Commandments. Surely we all believe in that. But they know that if they're going to put that in the square, they're going to have to be open to other kinds of monuments coming in, and some of those they might find deeply offensive. And So then, in the end, they have to ask themselves, do we want this at all in the first place?
All right, more about the Supreme Court and its decision. Our conversation with Noah Feldman continues on Talk of the Nation. I'm Frank Stachow from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Frank Stachow in Washington. Neil Conan is away. Public displays of the Ten Commandments are frequent fodder for the ongoing conflict over the separation of church and state. Today, the Supreme Court issued two rulings on the subject, which may have made things a little murkier. In the first case, framed copies of the commandments hanging in two Kentucky courthouses were declared unconstitutional endorsements of religion. But a 6-foot granite monument on the grounds of the Texas State Capitol passed muster because the justices deemed it a tribute to the nation's heritage. So what do you think? Are there right and wrong ways to display the Ten Commandments and other religious symbols? Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. Send us an email at totn@npr.org. Talking with Noah Feldman, who is the author of Divided by God, America's Church-State Problem. And Professor Feldman, I wonder if what other previous court decisions have informed this debate.
Oh, quite a number. The most famous is a decision called Lemon against Kurtzman, which gave rise to what's sometimes called the Lemon Test, and the people who hate it say it's a real lemon. That's the test that said that any government action must have a secular purpose, must have primarily secular effects, and must not entangle government with religion. And that was subsequently modified in the 90s to say that government should not endorse religion in any particular way. And that's the test that the Supreme Court purported to apply here. They asked whether, in fact, these commandments displays endorsed religion. The problem with the test is, as you can imagine, it's extremely subjective. What counts as an endorsement? Justice Breyer said that the one in the Texas Capitol does not endorse religion. 4 justices thought it did. You know, it's a very, very difficult thing to determine.
800-989-8255 is the number to call if you want to join our conversation, as John has done in Grand Junction. Hello, John.
Hi. Good to be on the show. You know, in Grand Junction, we have, I think, a case that's our situation was very germane. The city hall, I think, moved or did a remodel, and they put out a display of these Ten Commandments that had been donated from some local organization, and some people sued. And what they did in order to avoid the lawsuit was they took the Ten Commandments and they built on the city hall property a display, and they put the Magna Carta and the Bill of Rights, and they have these now part of a whole... Mm-hmm. Kind of, you know, small monument to legal foundations or something. And it's pretty innocuous now. I mean, it's, find it less intrusive. Actually, my personal comment is I find the whole thing so sad. I am a person of faith myself and probably am pretty conservative in my theology, and I just don't understand why this is such a hill to die on for people of faith and why people of faith push this particular issue forward. It's so divisive, and it doesn't seem to do anything to build community or heal anything. So, anyhow, so that's the situation in Grand Junction and my personal comment.
Well, John, I appreciate that. Noah Feldman, you've studied this. Why is it such an important topic?
It's an important topic because of what the commandments have been made to symbolize. But I tend to agree with John. There's a terrible irony that the Ten Commandments are the part of the Bible that prohibits the making of any graven image. And here we're talking about cases that are about graven images of the Ten Commandments. And they're not generating reconciliation in communities. And I think John is probably right that they're not making anybody more deeply committed to their beliefs. What they do, however, is they symbolize an idea that's shared by many people in the country that religious values should be important to government. And I really think that's the true divide. These symbols are significant not in themselves, but for what they stand for. And the debate is really between those who think we need more religion in public life and in our decisions, and those who think that we need religion to keep as a private matter.
Yeah, but clearly these symbols have become a litmus test. They're a test of whether or not, because it seems that it's not enough to judge the candidate on their, or their the lawmaker, for instance, the policymaker, on their choices in public office. Somehow how you come down on this particular issue is the real test.
I think that's true. I think it's part, though, of what happens in a democracy when people are trying to figure out where somebody stands, and they can't list every one of 100 different issues and find out how the person stands. So certain symbolic things come to play a major role, and this is one such thing. And Roy Moore in Alabama has used the Ten Commandments issue to create a whole political movement that I think he hopes will carry him into the governor's seat. I don't know if it'll do that, but it's certainly gotten new judicial nominees. They elect their judges in Alabama. And I think it's part of a political movement that could potentially have legs even outside of the Deep South.
It has great political power, and hard to know what kind of spiritual impact it has. Have you looked at that?
It's very difficult to measure a question like that. I think what does have a spiritual impact is the sense that people have of being embattled when a Ten Commandments monument is taken down. And if you really press me, I would say that perhaps the reason that Justice Breyer was willing to say that we shouldn't take down the monument at the Texas State House is that he guessed that if the Supreme Court ruled that it had to come down, it would have created a scene like the one we had in Montgomery, Alabama, a couple of summers ago, at which there are people praying and putting their bodies down in front of the bulldozers and refusing to allow it to be moved. And that's precisely the kind of thing that can have a spiritual impact on people because they feel that they're being marginalized and they feel that their faith is being impugned.
Let's go out to Ogden, Utah, where Max is on the line. Hi, Max.
How you doing?
Good. You have a question or observation for us?
Yeah, I just had a comment. Of course, I'm from a pretty conservative state myself, and there is dominant religion, which I am a member of. And I do believe that the commandments should be able to be displayed on a public property. Where I might have some people that might disagree is you talked about it a little bit, the other religions should be able to, you should have Jewish religion. It needs to be done tactfully. It needs to be done if it has something to do with the state's history, then it definitely needs to be. If you think of it in the fact that we all pay for our public lands, how much area is that plaque that's in the state capitol or the in the park, does that really take? And I think we should have a right to have something displayed. And Catholic, Jewish religions, it's not just Christian religions. It's other religions should have the opportunity too, but it does need to be in a tactful way, and that's where I don't have an answer as far as where do you
well, I guess the question, of course, the justices were facing is whether or not it in any way that display promotes one religion or another.
Well,
or any religion, yeah.
That's where, if it's being pushed, that you only have one, it needs to be open to L. You can't just push the one, like the one where he's putting it right, the one judge that put it right in the center of the Capitol. As you enter, you're forced to put it in there. It needs to have more of a equal shared floor space, I guess, as far as, not centered, because, the government can't push their dominant religion as far as, it needs to be done in a fair way.
All right, Max, thanks very much for your call. You know, I just wonder, Noah Feldman, after listening to Max, how many people really feel the way Max does? And the problem is, when you make it a political issue, you more or less have to choose, and then it becomes something you have to, you know, lay your body down for.
It's a good question. I mean, Max was very commonsensical, it seems to me, but his question raises a really tricky problem. Our history does take part, it should be a part of what we display, but our history is mostly Christian. It's only in more recent years that we've become more diverse. So if we limited ourselves to historical displays, we'd be disadvantaging not just Jewish displays, let's say, but also Muslim or Buddhist or Hindu displays. So I think what we have to take into account is not just our history, but also our present. And if we are going to have lots of displays, we're going to have to be open to those existing. I suspect that most people would be open up to the point, which was mentioned by our earlier caller, by Kadia, where it starts to seem like it's offensive and in some public way is causing offense. At that point, people draw back and they say, gee, wait a minute, maybe we don't want to have any of these displays in public at all.
Now, the other question you run into is if you are an atheist, then all of those displays are offensive or could be.
That's absolutely right. And I think that's why our ultimate test can't be, does a symbol give offense? Because every symbol, no matter how wonderful, it's going to offend somebody. You know, we've got statues of George Washington. That seems inoffensive, but George Washington was a slaveholder, you know, and it's entirely possible that could give offense to somebody. The same would be true of any historical personage in our history. So I think the test isn't really, is somebody offended? Because somebody's always going to be offended. The test has got to be, are we open to putting up statues or symbols of people who care about it if they've got public support for doing it?
Let's go out to San Antonio. Mike is on the line. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think that the conversation that we're having is like the 600-pound gorilla that's in the room that nobody wants to acknowledge mm-hmm. is in the room. We talk about the Ten Commandments, but it's the point that's been put on the pencil. But the real concern, I think, the reason that so many people want to have this clear separation between church and state is because of the fear that the majority religion will somehow try to impose itself on the minority religions and to limit what they do and what they're able to do. And unfortunately, our history has a lot of anti-Semitism in it, as well as a lot of persecution of other religions. Catholicism had a lot of problems. A lot of people had problems with Catholicism over much of our history. You'll recall during the 1960 election, John Kennedy's Catholicism was a real issue among lots of Christians in this country. There are a number of Christian groups that want to make the United States a Christian country, and I think that the Ten Commandments is really a symbol of the majority trying to essentially run over everybody else.
All right, Mike, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Noah Feldman, is that part of what's going on here? And let me broaden the question a little bit and talk about some of the other church-state issues, namely prayer in school, where what Mike was talking about I think is something that we hear very often in that debate.
Mike is completely right that one of the main reasons for the separation of religion and government in the United States, or at least of church and state formally, is to protect religious minorities. And that's exactly what the Founding Fathers had in mind. They didn't want anybody to be forced to support religion he didn't believe in or to perform any religious activity he didn't want to participate in. And when it comes to school prayer, the real question is, are the kids who are in the classroom when prayers are being recited being coerced? Are they being forced by peer pressure or by a sense that the school wants them to do this to recite those prayers? To me, that's the core question that ought to be asked. And I think we do have to be extremely sensitive about the potential experience of minorities. There is, however, a countervailing concern, which is that if we say that in order to avoid putting minorities in an awkward position, we're going to completely eliminate any public manifestations of religion at all, we're not going to have creches, we're not going to sing Christmas carols in school and so forth and so on, the result will be that many people in the majority, it's still a Christian majority in this country, and it's still even a Protestant majority, someday we may have only a Protestant plurality, but we're not there yet, those folks may begin to feel excluded. They may say, gee, why can't we have Christmas as a national holiday, as indeed we do? And so that's another countervailing concern, and those always have to be balanced against each other.
We are talking today about the Supreme Court and its two decisions on displaying the Ten Commandments in public places, government facilities. 800-989-8255 is the number to call if you want to join our conversation. And is it Trili on the line from Myrtle Beach?
Yes.
You have a question for us?
Yes, I do. I'm wondering if the Texas decision has opened the door to just any organization that wants to put up the Ten Commandments to say, well, it's a historical context. If we placed it in with other historical documents, then we can get away with it. We've got an out now.
All right. Noah Feldman, how did you read that decision? Will this make it very easy now for me to put up a couple of extra historical monuments with it and say it's part of a larger context?
Truly, if there was a clear answer to your question, you'd be able to mint it and make some real money, because the answer is that nobody is going to know after these opinions today what's constitutional and what isn't, because the displays that were ruled unconstitutional in the Kentucky courthouses were designed to be constitutional. They were put up, the Ten Commandments was put up alongside the Magna Carta and parts of the Declaration of Independence and lots of other documents that, although interestingly not the Constitution, which the people who put together the display thought would render it constitutional. And in Texas, by contrast, no one had really thought about this monument since 1961 when it went up. So it's very possible that all these opinions stand for, in the end, for the law, is the idea that if you've had something there for a long time, and if it's big and it's heavy, and it would be a real pain a real pain to move it, that it's going to be held constitutional. But if you go and design something new, the courts still reserve the right to strike it down. So it's really unfortunate, because the court is supposed to give us guidance, and I honestly can't say, and this is what I do for a living, I can't say that they've given us any guidance today.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Frank Stacio, talking with Noah Feldman, professor at New York University School of Law and author of Divided by God, America's Church-State Problem. We're taking your phone calls today on the Supreme Court decisions on displaying the Ten Commandments on government property. So do you see, I mean, is there a winner or loser, or is there any side in this culture war that's gaining ground after today?
Well, in the courts, we're at a standstill, I really think. Presently, you know, four justices think that the public displays of religion are pretty much fine. Four justices think these public displays of religion are pretty much unconstitutional. And then you have in the middle people who are willing to go back and forth. In previous cases, it's often been Justice Sandra Day O'Connor who's gone back and forth. This time, though, she was consistent, and it was Justice Breyer, who's also a pragmatist, who decided to be the guy who would split the difference and vote differently in the two different circumstances. So no one is winning right now. And there's a real irony to that, because the truth is that what the religious right cares about most are the symbols, but they're not necessarily winning symbol cases. What secularists mostly care about are also symbols, but they should be caring more about government funding of religion, and they've been losing the cases about the government funding of religion.
That's in some of the vouchers and some of those decisions.
Exactly. They've lost all of those decisions. The Supreme Court has ruled that vouchers are constitutional, and now the Bush administration has as one of its stated policy goals, getting more money into the hands of religious organizations for social programming.
Let's go to a Kentucky courthouse now, at the heart of today's Supreme Court decisions. Joining us from Whitley City, Kentucky, is Blaine Phillips. He's the McCreary County Judge Executive. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
What's your response to today's ruling?
Oh, we're very disappointed in it. We had optimism all the way until this morning. I really thought it would go 5-4 in our favor.
How did the Ten Commandments get onto your courthouse in the first place?
Okay, it was the former administration. We had a display with the Ten Commandments, and then by itself, and then we included it with a historical display, where it was just one of 15 or 20 documents on the wall. And then, of course, with the lower ruling from the judge, we had to remove it. And we took it to the American Legion Hall, and it's been there ever since.
Based on the Texas decision, it sounds like there is some room for you to maybe alter this display. Is that your next step, or what is your next step?
I think some people are calling that wiggle room. And you know, that was an unclear message that they had sent out, you know, as far as being the Ten Commandments by itself and then in granite. So the lawyers, I think, are going to look at that.
And so do you have a next step in mind?
No, not at this time. We're going to go by our legal representation, the Liberty Council. Mm-hmm. We'll be waiting on them to just see which way to go with it.
All right. Thank you very much, Blaine Phillips.
Well, thank you.
Blaine Phillips is McCreary County Judge Executive, joined us from McCreary County Courthouse in Whitley City, Kentucky. So do you see, Noah Feldman, more cases like this? In about 30 seconds we have left, more coming up and people trying to sort of pick another fight?
You betcha. As Mr. Phillips just said, they have no idea whether what the next thing they're going to do is constitutional or not. They're going to ask the lawyers. And there's just something wrong with a constitutional principle that is not clear to the ordinary person. If you need a law degree to understand it, there's something very wrong with the system.
Noah Feldman, professor at New York's University Law School, author of Divided by God, America's Church-State Problem and What We Should Do About It. Thanks very much.
Thank you for having me.
Noah Feldman joined us from the studios of Maine Public Broadcasting in Portland, Maine. Jazz Talk coming up. Stay with us. Thank you.